We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And now New Galaxy Broadcasting presents Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition, a program addressing the grave challenges to human and citizen rights in America and the rest of the world. How can we, the people of Earth, take back the power and privileges granted to us by God and address so significantly in the Declaration of Independence? Our rights are inalienable, that is, given by God and incapable of being taken away from or given by another. These rights are the basis of liberty, the foundation of all life and happiness. The Coalition of Planetary Empowerment is an organization designed to give its members tools and information to empower them personally, in relationships and in business and employment, but also to give them a voice and the ability to help transform political and corporate governance to support the true needs and desires of people throughout the world. Inalienable and Free focuses on the need for government and corporate business interests to be responsive to the will and desire of their constituents and consumer shareholders.
My name is Johnny Bluestar, and this is Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. We have a kind of a treat for you. Andy Miller is with us again. He was last time a guest, but now he's a guest host because he has so many interesting and informative insights into the processes that we talk about here having to do with our rights and freedoms. Hi, Andy. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Well, Andy, today we're going to look more closely into the U.S. attack on the alleged chemical weapons infrastructure on Syria, particularly from the perspective of the way we have received information about the report from mainstream and alternative news and other things that are related to this. Why are we choosing this perspective? Well, the reality is that both mainstream and alternative news must be vetted carefully. There are factions in mainstream news and factions in alternative news, and the ability of an outsider to get to the actual facts in something like Syria might be as profound as going over there and doing investigative reporting. In other words, to really know what you're doing, you almost have to be there. But since most people can't be there, you want to know how close, how many steps can you take to make a reasonable decision about things. Still, there are sometimes telltale signs, as we'll talk about, that tip the scales in favor of one side or another. And we'll talk about that tipping aspect in relationship to this attack on Syria. For instance, we know that the President of the United States launched an attack on Syria because of an alleged chemical warfare attack on civilians by the government of Syria. This attack was not approved by Congress, but largely accepted by senators and congressional representatives and cheerleaded by the bulk of mainstream media. This is real knowledge, and I think we can have a definite sense of at least the facts. What do you think, Andy? Do we believe that he's actually attacked?
I think it's safe to assume that there was an attack. There's so much worldwide coverage that for there not to be an attack is an unreasonable expectation. A famous Franciscan friar named William of Ockham said, when you have a bunch of competing theories, hypotheticals, the one that is simplest, most obvious is more likely because that's the least likely to refute. And I think it's safe to say there was an attack by the United States and coalition on Syria and coalition, that it was alleged due to a chemical weapons attack. I believe there was a chemical weapons strike beforehand. Whether you agree it's perpetrated by Syria or not, I believe it's safe to assume there was some sort of chemical weapons attack. In the area has a history of chemical weapons attacks. It wouldn't be surprising.
There's a lot of questions about that, which we'll go into. As a matter of fact, there are definite statements there was no chemical attack and some witnesses who claim they were there. But we'll go into that. And I think it's a very complex question here.
Yes, well, in any situation, Syria or otherwise, there are always counterposing viewpoints. There are people who provide evidence for whatever viewpoint they want to promote. And so our job as the listeners to try and sift through all this and try to discern as best we can what the truth is as we hear it, because really these situations are often complex with so many competing interests, you can almost make whatever case you want if you look hard enough.
Well, here's an example. Did all the missiles actually land on their targets, as the U.S. and their allies have said, or were the bulk of them shot down by the Syrians, as the Russians and the Syrians have said? Why would Assad take the risk?
Let me ask you, does that matter?
Yeah, it does. It matters to the people who want to know that we have an accurate and overwhelming power in the United States on our side. On the other hand, the people in Syria want to know that they are really actually protected to some degree by the defensive weapons they have. Their defensive weapons are kind of old. They could shoot down missiles, but it's not the latest variety. The Russians have promised them something more robust, and that's also
As I understand, the Russians already have that advanced anti-missile system available to the Russians should they choose to use it in Syria.
They do have it, but they're thinking of letting Syria have it.
Well, you know what happens? Oftentimes, the hand that you feed bites you back, so you've got to be careful with that. You make a good point about the need to know accurate truth so you can get a good gauge on how safe you can feel. I understand that need, but we may not be able to discern the exact truth. So I guess my broader point was, to what extent can we expect to know the exact truth? At what level can we make do with probablys and more than likelies?
Well, let's get into that more, because that's exactly what we're discussing, right? Well, here's another question. Why would Assad, who's kind of winning the war now, take the risk, since he was attacked last year for an alleged chemical attack, which a lot of people believe was a false flag, but it was still a real attack? And now, why would he risk it again at a point where it's seemingly things are doing a lot better for him? It seems like he was winning the war. And why should he risk it?
There are a number of possible reasons. Without knowing the truth, there are some reasons that would make some sense if he chose to do them. One could posit that he doesn't care and never did, and he's going to use the weapons when he feels like it, maybe to inflict terror, maybe because he had an argument with a family member. Any one of a number of reasons could prompt someone who really doesn't care about what others feel to go ahead and do something like that. They don't have to have a reason as we know it. You're right to say, why would someone bother? Wouldn't that seem to inflict unnecessarily cruelty and possible international repercussions? But I've seen leaders do worse than that, so it wouldn't surprise me.
I don't know. Winning the war, and you take a risk of being attacked by the strongest military force in the world.
Maybe he feels that Russia's got his back, and he doesn't have to worry about being attacked by the strong. Obviously, all we did was a pinprick twice. Clearly, the United States poses no threat to Assad in his mind.
That's not true. We've been supporting the various rebel elements, some of which are like Al-Qaeda and ISIS affiliated. We've been supplying them with arms.
The best truth that I have right now is that there are about three sets of factions and some stragglers. One is Syrian Russia. One is the Saudis and Turkey. And the other is the U.S., France, and Western countries. And our support has been different. It's been somewhat hesitant, and we are concerned with who we support. So we, at least in the public media, we only support moderate groups. And so it's very complicated. We haven't been perceived by most as being fully throated support of, like, say, we have in Afghanistan. Our support has been somewhat hesitant, and our policies across presidents have been...
Well, you missed out on Israel, and you missed out on Iran.
Israel and Iran are fighting a proxy war for the control of Syria. Israel doesn't like the fact that Iran is shipping weapons to Hezbollah, and Iran has got millions of dollars and lots of troops because they essentially want to influence Syria.
Well, we'll see about that point you make about Israel in a little while. But let's why would
so how do you,
why would Trump
so how do you
why
tell
would,
the truth?
Wait a second, Andy. Why would Trump get these missiles going before there was an investigation, when the UN was ready to do it? Why would he do it before there was an investigation?
Well, the fact that there's a claim that it was before an investigation is probably, in their minds, a question of debate. The U.S. government said, whether you believe it or not, that they had proof that it was definitely a chemical attack. It was chlorine, and I think they said sarin. And the claim was that was typical of what Assad had done in the past. And I can't know, sitting here, that when they tell me the Defense Department has incontrovertible proof that it's not true, and I can't know, sitting here, that when other people say it hasn't been concluded, that that's not true either. I just don't know.
There's only two reasons that, you, according to international law, that you can attack another country like this. One is that you attack yourself. The other is that it's in your national interest because there are citizens there or something else. In terms of Andy, I'm not finished.
Sorry.
So when you go ahead and you have a president attack another country, particularly one which is backed by a nuclear power, there is a good reason to think that that international law is true, but it's also true that in the United States, although there's a sort of a push towards a unitary executive who can do whatever he wants, it's usually said there has to be some kind of real threat to the United States. Maybe worth waiting for, to have an objective outside group, maybe through the United Nations or elsewhere, inspect these circumstances. What's the rush?
And
why is there a rush?
That.
Don't you think that because there's a rush and because this is a sort of this, what if every president and king and, you know, and prime minister in the world decided, okay, there's a humanitarian situation going and a humanitarian issue here. Let's just go ahead and attack them. Let's just go ahead and send missiles over their way. And, you know, that's that. There you go. And let's not talk to Parliament. Let's not talk to Congress.
Well, if you're asking what I feel that it was at least rushed, if not inappropriate. That's how I feel. If you want to discuss international law, I can tell you the law on which their theory was based. And the U.S. and Britain and France even had their own dissenters within their governments about debating whether that was a valid use of international law.
Well, excuse me, Annie, I think I said something wrong there. International law is, if you're attacked, you can respond. Secondly, the other reason is that you have the approval of the Security Council. Those are the two reasons. Yeah, that's right. Through a resolution. That's
well,
not
I know
vetoed.
That the Brits. I know the Brits argued. Theresa May argued that it was an international humanitarian necessity, and her opposition had a good, valid argument against it. So, you know, if you're asking how I feel, I think the whole thing was unwarranted and potentially dangerous. But I'm trying to address when people are trying to discern what's the truth. Okay, we have a media now that has decided that it's not cost effective to send reporters to more remote places. So you'll notice most of the media stories are either rehashes of what's in the papers or reporting from close into our territories because that's where they can spend the least money.
I don't think that's the reason, Andy. I don't think that's the reason. I don't think it's a question of money. I think it's a question of not wanting to report the news in a direct way.
Well, what I'm getting at is reporting accurate news takes work. Okay. It takes effort to do it right or to do it come closer to right. And the media institutions we have now don't seem to want to go to any effort.
Well, that's getting back into the whole point of this discussion, which is based on the idea. The question is there such a thing as reporting patriotically, that is to say, reporting in light of our Constitution, Declaration, and our various values and laws that we have, isn't the press there to defend those ideals that are embedded in the American Constitution, or is it there to cater to sponsors and to a government that's gone astray from those ideals?
Ideally,
let's look at this.
The founders. The founders ideally said the press was there, the press and individuals and groups were there as watchdogs on the government.
Exactly.
The fourth branch of government.
Well, let's listen to this.
It's been perverted.
Yeah.
Go on.
We're going to listen to this report, N11. We're going to listen to a discussion of what happened when an organization went over there after the fact of the chemical attack and what they found.
Coming from RT.com, no attack, no victims, no chemical weapons. Duma witnesses speak at OPCW briefing at The Hague. Witnesses of the alleged chemical attack in Duma, including 11-year-old Hassin Daib and hospital staff, told reporters at The Hague that the White Helmets video used as a pretext for the U.S.-led strike on Syria was, in fact, staged. Quote, we were at the basement and we heard people shouting that we needed to go to a hospital. We went through a tunnel. At the hospital, they started pouring cold water on me, the boy told the press conference gathered by Russia's mission at the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons at The Hague. An administrator of the emergency ward recalled that, quote, there were people unknown to us who were filming the emergency care. They were filming the chaos taking place inside and were filming people being doused with water. The instruments they used to douse them with water were originally used to clean the floors, actually. That happened for about an hour. We provided help to them and sent them home. No one has died. No one suffered from chemical exposure.
Well, do you know that the Russian government predicted this about a month ago? They predicted
I know that that story is not necessarily a contradiction to other stories. I know that that news source network is controversial, is both over-vilified and under-recognized at the same time. And I know that that report, there are many reports that can be cherry-picked to promote a point. So the trick is, how do you determine what's truthful and what's valid and what makes sense? And the I guess I formulated in my brain as a viewer, one thing I do, of course, is get as many sources of information as I can. Then as I listen, if there are common facts to each report, those might either be true or the same bias. If there are uncommon facts, those might either be uniquely truthful and not reported elsewhere, or perhaps fictitious creations of the motivation of the reporting agency. So it's on us as individuals to ferret out.
Well, here's one interesting thing. Here's an interesting point, a claim that people have. They say we destroyed the scientific laboratory that was actually creating these chemical weapons. And the thing is, it was right near residences. Why would we blow up a facility like that that would cause immediate damage and death to people nearby? And it didn't happen. And people went there afterwards, and there was no problem.
What, you didn't see the pictures on TV?
Of that chemical factory?
They showed a blowed-up building and said, that's the research facility. Don't you believe everything you see?
I'm just telling you what people thought.
The official answer to your question is a Tomahawk missile can literally destroy the front door of a building and leave the rest of the building untouched in the street. So there is theoretically an explanation if you choose to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna take that risk with the Tomahawk missile that'll only hit the door?
Well, they cost tens of millions of dollars, and that gives defense contractors a way to make more money.
Well, I think they did more damage than that, Andy. But anyway.
No, but I'm just saying, they could claim that precision munitions can do that without damaging the next block over. That could be a claim to explain it. I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying that is one of the claims that would be made. So it depends what
you think. Well, let's go into this question of the legality of this war, of this airstrike. What do you think about that? I'm not talking about what you feel about that in light of what you know about the domestic and international law.
Legality and sovereignty is a tricky thing. If something horrible is happening in another country, by law, we're not allowed to intervene unless there's a UN resolution. However, the country who's being intervened will say that UN resolution is illegal. So legality rests on a consensus, okay? I don't know The other thing about
how can you say that legality rests on consensus? That's not really. That's not really legality.
No, it's. Well, I'm using the word legality in quotes.
What you really mean is that legality can be in the real world overridden by consensus.
Let's try it this way. Let's separate legality from justice. The rule of law, although based on precedent, is often open to manipulation, political manipulation. So the rule of law is not always what I would consider just. So maybe I'm using the wrong words. What's just is set by tradition, by belief. What's legal is often modified by a political body. I mean, our Congress could make bank robbing legal today. They actually kind of sort of have. So I'm careful with the word legal, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think that, excuse me, Annie, I think it's time for a slight break. I'm going to give a message and a little interesting song to calm us down. And this is a message about creating the kind of book many people could readily create. And then a really beautiful song, at least a piece of it. That's C8 and M7.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. Want to write a book but don't want the challenges of developing time-consuming social media platform, costly private book promotions, complex email campaigns, and advertising commitments? If you write a book about your business, you don't need a mass audience. Focus on prospective clients with the best business card there is, your own book. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. Here is a beautiful song by Patty Greer called Autumn Glow.
She's an angel with a bended wing. You know that she's grounded so that she will sing, not fly away. She's an angel with a golden heart. You know that she can make the wind.
Patty Greer is one of the leading experts in the world in crop circles and a filmmaker that has for many years been specializing in that. But she's also a fantastic singer, songwriter, harpist. She has had an incredible career, mostly before that, but her work is just magnificent. I want to remind our audience, this is a talk show. You want to jump in and fight with us? Our number is 888-429-5471. That's just a joke. But keep your questions and comments connected to the theme of the show, which is patriotic reporting, focus on Syria. Is Syria being reported in the right way in terms of the fourth estate? The press is the one most protected and only protected business by the Constitution. So they took it seriously. 888-429-5471. Looking forward to speaking to you if you so wish.
I think if the media were really patriotically responsible, they would spend less time reporting on day-to-day affairs and more time focusing on why the Syria conflict started. It started because large swaths of population were being deprived of their freedoms. and employment and liberty and pursuit of happiness. Had we not had help in our founding, we could have ended up like a 1700s era Syria. We failed to understand that this is about freedom.
Well, you know, the thing is that that's a big controversy, Andy. A lot of people think that's not what happened, and that the attacks on Assad were not from the rebels within the country, from their citizens, but they were from these rebel groups that were financed to attack him. But nonetheless,
our patriotic media should be looking into that issue further to determine.
Well, yes, I do think so, but maybe that issue has been falsified. I'm not saying it has been because I don't know for sure. But I'm just saying that is the excuse that is being given to a lot of the things that we're doing, but there's other things involved. But first, let's talk to another problem. Let's look at an unintended consequence of Trump's Syria attack. Let's try N12.
Well, you know, the S-300 to Syria, I think, is really a flashpoint. And here's, I just had a couple of quotes on it. And here's what Netanyahu said to Russia when the issue came up again. Quote, "We will destroy your missiles if you deliver them to Assad," end quote. Israel considers it a red line. And here was Russia's response. If Israel destroys anti-aircraft batteries, it would be, quote, catastrophic for all sides. And then again, the Israeli Defense Minister Lieberman said, quote, "If someone shoots at our planes, we will destroy them. Doesn't matter if it's an S-300 or an S-700, end quote. So really, it is a war of words now. What will happen? I don't know that anyone knows. And I suspect this is why General Votel was in Israel.
You know what that reminds me of is that Israel saying, don't shoot at our airplanes, even if we're trying to bomb you, because that would be an act of aggression.
Yeah.
Remember the thing in Iraq?
Yeah, exactly.
That one person said, we have to go to war against Iraq because they're shooting at our airplanes and we're bombing. And the act of aggression was defending their country.
Well, you know, this is another aspect of it, is the side effects of all this going on. And there are things that you cannot control. When you attack another country, you cannot necessarily control what their response or their allies' response will be. And in this case,
one could make the credible case that the reason why the whole Sunni Shia conflict has erupted in several states through the Middle East is because we chose to invade Iraq and set off that very law of unintended consequences. And what's worse is we did it, if you go back to Saddam, we had an ambassador, I think it was April Glasby, who essentially told Saddam, we gave him the okay to invade Kuwait, then we attacked him for it. It's just like what you were talking about with Israel. We gave someone the okay to do something, then we condemned him for it. The only thing I can assume is it's political expedience. Otherwise, it makes no sense. It's just destructive.
Well,
what was the point of bombing Syria? Was it supposed to deter future chemical attacks? No, that proved it didn't happen last year. I think part of the justification was we could make a showing to the world that we're helping to deter chemical weapons, and we can make a showing of how good we are because, look, we're fighting the use of chemical weapons.
Yeah, the price, to me, this is where I stand in this personally, at the expense of the protections that we have from a unitary president, a unitary executive, and without involving Congress, which represents the people, and something that could actually lead to a world war that could destroy the planet. You know, Lynn Mystic Healer is on the phone. Let's see what she has to say. Hey, Lynn.
Hello. Really, I'm glad you guys are getting some information out. Please share johnperkins.org. It's really, really critical information. Thank you. And, you know, he has two books out, Works with the Veterans for Peace, and he's got all kinds of information that can, and then the Truth, 9/11 Truth out group. It's really a critical group to understand the truth about 9/11, so you really understand what's been happening. You know, the also to veteransforpeace.org, really, really, really important. And then the memos from oh gosh, Colin Powell that came out in 1973 as a plan to attack the different countries with Israel's okay and Israel being part of the cabal, so to speak, and the facts of who and what countries that they were going to invade. So it's really important to get the truth out about the whole warring paradigm. And the other really good one is there's a video out. It's called The Good War. It's really critical to get that out to people. And then the really good one is the Trillionaires Club documentary, Wake Up America. Wake up, Lynn. Humanity.
Thank you, Lynn. You know, you spoke about John Perkins. I've just finished his book called Hoodwinked. I also read his book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And he really gives you a close look at what is really going on with these other countries and our foreign policy. It's heartbreaking.
One of the things the media isn't reporting on is the issue of oil in war or rare earths and lithium in war. We're not getting any reporting on the fact that the majority of our conflicts are because of natural resource competition.
Yes, that's particularly what he would do is he'd go into a country. This was a private organization that was sort of spearheading certain elements in government. And he'd go in and he'd do an analysis and he'd say, well, we're going to lend you a lot of money and it's going to help your infrastructure, your water, your electricity, your agriculture. And they go in, they lend all this money to this company, to this country. And a tremendous amount of money. Then they pay American or related corporations, multinationals, to come in there and they do the work. They pay them, not the people in the country. And then
the sad part is those companies would be doing the work over there and not doing anything over here.
And then these countries would go into debt. They go into extreme debt and they use that debt to get them to get deals on their oil or other natural resources, different advantages they had. And if they didn't follow the rules, somebody might die. So it's
you need to do a show on the media and debt one day.
Well, John Perkins is really was right out there doing all this bad stuff as an economic hitman. But then he repented.
Let me ask a question about the media. What do you think about the BBC being publicly funded as opposed to our media? Do you think that makes them more open to more investigative reporting and more responsibility?
No, I don't. I really don't know if I could answer that question.
Would public funding help if American media were more public, the mainstream media were more publicly funded? Would there be a better chance of getting somewhat more balanced information?
Funded by the government? Well, you know.
No, by us. We all pay licenses, and that funds the program.
There are radio stations and media like that, and as a matter of fact, a lot of alternative media is now funded by the people. But NPR has gotten a lot of flack about and they're mild compared to other organizations.
And so, one of the reasons NPR is mild is because of the flack they're getting, and that's a cultural, political thing. That's an underlying problem we have to solve as a people. I think the reason NPR is getting flack is by powerful forces that want to demonize it because they're afraid that NPR might become objective if they were allowed to.
So are you talking about being funded by the people or by the government?
By the people. Direct funding by the people.
Well, then you don't need the government.
For media, the government has no.
And there are like... WBAI in New York is an old one that has been funded.
I used to be a contributor to WBAI, actually.
When I was there and I listened to them a lot in New York, they're a tremendous asset, I thought. Depends on what they were saying.
Pacifica still operates. They operate still at least five stations around the country, and I agree with you. There's Pacifica was a place you could go to hear things you wouldn't hear anywhere else.
Well, I'm going to bring another element into this, and this is a little bit speculative. I don't know. I know a little bit about it because I did a little bit of research, but it's a powerful claim. This was made in 2017 by David Dix, who works for a Canadian organization called Press for Truth. And let's hear N13 Golan Heights discovery.
Now, before we can get into the significance of what I found here, we need to provide some background information for context. And we're going to start back in 2009 when Qatar proposed a pipeline plan to Assad in order to send its natural gas into Europe through Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Jordan. Now, Assad refused this offer in order to, quote, protect the interest of its Russian ally, which is Europe's top supplier of natural gas. So Assad essentially just said thanks, but no thanks. And then 1 year later, Assad began negotiations for another pipeline plan, only this one is going to carry Iranian gas to Europe across Iraq and Syria. And of course, if this were to be built, Europe's dependence on Russia is going to continue, and that is in Assad's best interest. Now, here, many journalists have correctly pointed out that the U.S.-backed Qatar-Turkey pipeline into Europe is in direct competition with, and in fact in direct conflict with, the Russian-backed Iranian-Syrian pipeline into Europe. And this has led many to speculate that this current proxy war in Syria right now has everything to do with maintaining the flow of gas and energy into Europe through these particular pipelines. But what I have discovered here paints a bit of a different picture, because according to my research, the X that marks the spot, so to speak, is not here, but it is in fact down here in a region known as Golan Heights. This is on Syria's land, but two-thirds of it is occupied by Israeli forces, and here's where it gets interesting. In 2013, a company called Genie Oil and Gas was granted exclusive oil and gas exploration rights to this 153 square mile radius here in the southern part of the Golan Heights, and this was granted to them by none other than the Netanyahu government. And as it turns out, in 2015, it was discovered that this Israeli-occupied Golan Heights in Syria has more oil and gas than Saudi Arabia does. Guys, this is huge, because you can now officially add Israel into the mix when it comes to potentially sparking World War III, all because of oil in Syria.
Well, that's a kind of a big deal, Andy.
Well, I don't have any way of knowing whether that particular scenario is true, but I have no doubt that the last several conflicts have been predicated on fossil fuel transport or rare earth acquisition. I have no doubt about the general theme. The particulars are up for debate. How you measure oil may depend on what extraction methods you use. There's a lot of debatable details, but I have absolutely no doubt that the primary... Look at the guy who was VP of the U.S. when we went to Iraq was a Halliburton president.
Well, we're gonna explore a little bit about that Halliburton guy. He's going to be mentioned anyway in a little bit. Right now, I'd like to play a couple of things. One of them is about a memoir I edited with a Korean War veteran and a lifelong career crime fighter, Ray Boylan. Over time, Ray and I became good friends. We collaborated on a film and book franchise called The Foot Soldier. His book is called West Side Warrior, and I can tell you his real story is the adventure of a lifetime, beginning with his pre-adolescent membership in a 1940s youth gang and progressing to fighting in Korea when the Chinese invaded, and his subsequent efforts to fight crime in Manhattan, his favorite city. The experiences that he had during the Korean War really are germane to the situation now, which could be the wonderful occasion that this armistice will actually be settled and the war will be over. Anyway, let's play West Side Warrior and then talk a little bit about our mission as New Galaxy Enterprises.
The following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here! There's too many of them!" Again, we saw the Chinese soldiers charge again with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Andy, you brought up the name of Cheney, right? And I'd like to play another little bit more about Genie Oil and its advisory board. That's on N14.
Living in a border area disputed by two nations may be hard enough, but the Druze community in the Golan Heights are now facing another difficulty, that of oil exploration on their doorstep. An American company started drilling wells there with Israel's approval, but locals fear they won't reap any of the benefits, as Paula Slee has been finding out for us.
For many, it's hard to tell where Israel ends and Syria begins. For decades, the Druze community of the disputed Golan Heights has been locked in between two nations hostile to each other. And when profit enters the scene, the hope of ever ending the status quo dies. With the approval of Tel Aviv, American gas and oil giant AFIC is now beginning a huge amount of drilling in the Golan. For Sami Ayob, a Druze who lives in the area, this adds insult to injury.
One thing we know in the Golan Heights is that Syrian and international law prohibits the occupation from exploiting natural resources. These belong to the Syrian people, and they should be redistributed to their owners.
But while local communities blame each other, corporate figures are turning a profit. The agreement is for 3 years, during which AFIC can drill 10 wells in order to search for oil. Experts believe it exists in a conventional liquid form, but they won't know until they start drilling. And they insist it's safe. But environmental experts disagree. 900 oppositions to the project have been filed by locals, Jewish and Druze alike. Their biggest concern is that even if only a small amount of oil seeps into the underground water network, it could eventually reach the Sea of Galilee and make Israel's largest freshwater reservoir undrinkable.
This is not against AFIC, and it doesn't matter what oil they're digging for. Any oil digging will destroy the whole Golan area, its environment, and it will endanger the people.
But Israel hopes the find will provide security and independence, especially after relations with nations like Turkey, where a lot of Israel's energy dependence comes from, have deteriorated. Ultimately, though, it's a foreign party who benefits.
The Americans have the expertise. Even when an Israeli company gets the permits, like in this case, the people who are doing the drilling are those with expertise, foreigners. In Israel, because this is so rare and the chance is so slim, we don't have too many investors and we lack the expertise.
But it's still early days. There may not even be oil underground. The benefits, however, will be far removed from the people who may or may not be living on top of it. Paulislia RT, Northern Israel.
I actually made a mistake, Andy. That was when drilling began there in 2015.
That's okay. Let me address one thing about you talk about the media. There's something important. One thing I want to say: why we make unnecessary military strikes? Why we let our fossil fuels, energy, other corporations rule us? Is a failure to grab our own democracy, both local and national and global. If we create win-win environments and environments where we, the people, knowing our responsibility toward each other, use the entire spectrum of nurturing, we will then imbue our locality and our nation and our planet with the tools it needs to avoid these unnecessary militaristic strikes and to avoid these corporate dominations and to report on them accurately when we do.
Yeah, I think that cooperative capitalism, that I prefer to call it that instead of predatory capitalism, would be the answer. But let's look at the Gene Oil a little bit more. It's actually N15. Let's look at that.
They're not win-win, they're win-lose.
New Jersey-based Genie Energy is digging for oil in Syria, even though it clearly violates international law under the Geneva Convention. You don't have to dig too far to find out how this genie clawed out of its oil barrel. First, the reason it violates international law. Genie Oil has been granted permits to drill in Syria, not by Syria, but by Israel. That's because they're going to dig in the region of Syria known as the Golan Heights, which is occupied by the Israelis now. That occupation itself violates international law, and the drilling specifically violates the annex to the Fourth Geneva Convention. So Israel's right to dig there is hotly contested, and yet that's exactly what's happening with Genie Oil. Now for the reasons they're getting away with it. Heading up the effort is a man named Effie Eitem. He's a former Israeli military commander who has said in an actual speech, "We cannot be with all these Arabs, and we cannot give up the land, because we have already seen what they do there. Some of them may be able to stay under certain conditions, but most of them will have to go." So this anti-Arab Israeli is heading the charge for Genie Oil to drill in Syria. He makes for a powerful force to drive the drilling forward, but his cohorts are even more powerful. Because Genie Oil investors include none other than Dick Cheney, Rupert Murdoch, Lord Jacob Rothschild, ex-CIA Director James Woolsey, ex-Secretary of the Treasury Larry Summers, ex-Governor of New Mexico Bill Richardson, and other ex-members of American government. They are all invested in Genie Oil. And they all stand to profit big time for drilling in the already ravaged Syria. So it should come as no surprise that the project is moving along nicely. Genie just finished the flow testing phase and is now analyzing samples from their drilling site. So instead of putting money and food and help into Syria, these Western billionaires and their government cohorts are taking oil and money out of Syria. Apparently, there will be no putting this greedy genie back into its barrel.
Well, Andy, we've got just 2 minutes more for you to sum up your whatever insights you have before we go towards the end.
I've chosen to spend my time trying to get facts and trying to adjust the processes to get information better. I've chosen not to spend too much of my time vilifying people and creating theories of potential conspiracy because there's plenty of those out there. I just think that if we improve how we deal with each other, these are symptoms of those problems, and they will dissipate as we improve how to help each other. Oh, and one last note, important to get involved in local politics. National security is based on community cohesion. Don't forget local politics and local activism in your community.
Well, thank you, Andy. Right now, Andy has been substituting, thank goodness, for Dr. Hugo Rodier, who had an important engagement he had to go to this Saturday. Let's hear a little bit about what he does. C7.
Dr. Hugo Rodier is a medical doctor trained in nutritional medicine with a special interest in intestinal disorders. You may schedule a consult via Skype or telephone by calling 801-898-3317. Or via email by accessing his website, hugorodier.com, H-U-G-O-R-O-D-I-E-R
GoldenHeights.com. No insurance accepted, but a form is available to apply for reimbursement from your insurance, except for Medicare. Dr. Rodier speaks English, French, and Spanish.
Well, Andy, I want to really thank you for this. This has been very interesting and a bit challenging, but I really do appreciate you coming. I want to thank you, therefore, and I also want to thank Hassan Khan for his help in all things related to New Galaxy Enterprises. Linda Mystic Keeler, who called in, and she's been doing a lot of background work for the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment. And thank you, Patricia Well, for the song that we're going to play as we go out called Ooh Ooh Baby, a very moving song. Anyway, we'll go in. We'll be saying goodbye now. Good luck and keep cosmic. Thanks for joining Dr. Rodier and I on Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. As we go about developing our new organization, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment, we hope you will consider the importance of taking part in the electoral processes of your government and asserting the rights you have to vote for the companies you respect and love by casting your ballot as a shareholder or as a consumer with what you buy. We hope soon to make this possible through a social network responsive to your needs to dialogue about your rights as a citizen, but also to be able to effectively act in concert with like-minded colleagues to find representatives of government and business executives who will hear your voice and appreciate your message. See you soon.
Made a few.